So good morning, everyone. Welcome to Dawn Mountain Float on the cloud. We thought we would avoid the Super Bowl, but it sounds like we haven't. I don't know that we knew that when we booked this situation. So we'll give them a run for their money in about a half an hour, but we will talk together a little bit, talk amongst ourselves. I got stimulated by the idea of the Super Bowl. Just made me think about the way we all, in our culture, we're all kind of acculturated pretty much the same way. And most of us in the modern world, if we've been affected by modernity, are pretty much affected. You know, the Super Bowl is on. We're not going to deny that. And for fans, it's like a really, really exciting moment. See a whole bunch of 200 and over pound men hitting each other and running swiftly and catching little pigskin balls. We get very excited. And, you know, we get with our friends and we rah, 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 and we feel alive. And it occurred to me that to think about, well, that's one way that we get excited and we feel alive and we feel joy, and it's wonderful. And it's very, very energizing. And there's this whole other manner of getting to feel alive, which is quite different. And it has to do with practicing meditation. And in many ways, meditation for feeling alive is kind of counterintuitive. You know, if you were to tell somebody, you know, I went on a retreat and for 8 to 10 hours a day, I was sitting and I was looking at my breathing and observing my breath, they would think that sounds pretty deadening. And from the outside, admittedly, that does sound kind of deadening. But hopefully, even in the little bit of time that we practice on a Sunday morning together, you can experience some different kind of effect in terms of what and how meditation really allows us to feel perhaps a different kind of aliveness. And I've come up with a whole bunch of acronyms about meditation to help us remember things. And of course, I have to remember the acronyms. But just to keep it short this morning, the one that I will talk about is FACT. So that's an acronym. An acronym is just a shorthand way of giving us a couple of letters to hang on to, and then when we unpack the letters, you'll know what they stand for, and then you could, if you need to refresh yourself, you can remember FACT. So the first letter in FACT is F, and that stands for fresh. And it's actually quite a good letter to start with, because really in our culture, fresh is usually equated with two things. Different and almost shorter and shorter duration of attention span. So if we want a fresh experience, you know, maybe in the old days, a fresh experience would be desirable after maybe a minute or two. And now, I don't know if there's even studies of this, but I think it's like, what, 10 seconds. You know, if we put up a web announcement or anything on the internet, we expect people to hold attention for about 10 seconds, maybe. Anything over that is considered like a success. So that's one way of accomplishing freshness of mind, something new. But interestingly enough, there's another way of accomplishing freshness of mind, which is completely opposite of changing the object, and that is to be steady and level and light-touched with respect to what it is we're engaging with. I always like to tell the story, many of you I'm sure have heard it already, of the Western businessman who goes to Japan during the cherry blossom season and where the plums are blossoming, and the person, their host, says, "Come out and see my plum blossoms." And the Western businessman goes out and, you know, looks at the plum blossoms, maybe a minute, you know, very nice. And then it's sort of like, next. And the Japanese host has every expectation that they would spend an hour observing these plum blossoms. Unless we do what I'm about to describe, and you have the experience, it's really not easy to believe. But if we place our mind attentively with a light touch on something and keep it there, after a while, there's actually a quality of the mind that brings forth a kind of pleasure and interest that is very, very unusual, especially when the object in and of itself seems to be intrinsically boring. So the breath is kind of intrinsically boring. It's, you know, tell anybody that you're going to spend any time whatsoever with breathing, and they really will think you're kind of crazy. But we start attending to our breath with a light touch, with some steadiness and duration, and we start noticing that it's enlivening, enriching, and quite pleasurable, and just oddly interesting. And it's an interest that's not because we just came to a new object and I just got my new BMW and isn't it interesting, and I've just gone to this new exhibition at the museum and isn't it interesting with that newness and freshness. And those are all ways of doing it. But this is just a whole other way of being enlivened and interested and energized in something that's very, very close to hand and is always with us and is, in a way, infinitely rich in detail once we slow down and allow our attention to become steady, but with a light touch. So that's freshness. We bring a freshness of our attention to something that we think we know. Really, really, one could almost sum up the whole Buddhist path with the word freshness. It's too far afield to go into right now, but you know, we all have a sense of self. I mean, we just do. And the whole Buddhist enterprise is in a way to bring some fresh attention to what is this self that we talk so much about and we feel so much about. And it's quite surprising and, again, enlivening when we pay some attention to what that is with some fresh attention. And frankly, in our relationships, when we're with people, if we can look with one at one another with some fresh eyes, it's also quite amazing. And you know, you might think you know your partner or your friend, but just even look at somebody's face freshly and newly, and you start noticing all sorts of changes, all sorts of nuance, all sorts of things that you never knew were there, including if you can really just be steady and clear, and again, light touch, you start noticing things about people's emotions. So freshness can be very, very enlivening, and it's one ingredient in super centering for Super Bowl Sunday. The next is, for fact, is acceptance. Acceptance is a huge topic. Again, strange to say, the whole Buddhist path, in a way, could be articulated just under the rubric of acceptance. I had occasion to, someone referred recently, there's a Buddhist text named after one of the disciples called the Bahia text. It's a text that occurred in a conversation with Bahia. And part of the core of it is, in the seen, be with the seen, and with the heard, be with the heard, with the thought, be with the thought. It's very strange. Just be with what's seen and what's heard and what's thought. But if we spend some careful, fresh attention with our experience as opposed to what we think our experience is, we start noticing some interesting things. You know, what is the nature of sight? What is the nature of sound? What is the nature of thought? What's the nature of our experience? Now, psychologically, I know for myself that I have a kind of inclination to, you know, if something is in front of me, I can discern that there's this kind of energy that I have to immediately move off of what's in front of me. Or I might notice that, you know, certain kind of feelings might come up. Maybe I feel some resentment, but I immediately can notice that it's like I push that aside. Or some kind of, oh, there's this beautiful car, I think I want one, but I might push that aside. And, you know, that comes from all sorts of both adult conditioning and conditioning as a child, where we've been taught and instructed not to really just allow our experiences to be experienced. Certainly one of the biggest issues on a spiritual path for all of us is acceptance of ourselves as we are. There's an enormous amount of self-criticism that most of us carry, both in terms of our performance in our daily lives and our relationships, and whether we can fix the faucet right. And then when we come to a spiritual endeavor, we immediately bring the same kind of programming to whatever our spiritual endeavor might be. Let's just pay attention to our breathing and rest in our breathing. Oh, I'm not doing it right. I'm a terrible meditator. I'm not spiritual. We all have these voices. It's not like you're alone. And I will deliver the sad news that while many, many, maybe not all of you, but many and many of you might feel you're the worst at whatever it is you feel you're the worst at. A reality is many of us feel like we're the worst, and sorry, there's too much competition. We are not the worst. We're just human beings, but we have these voices that are internalized, sometimes brittle and brutal, which embody an absence of self-acceptance. So in terms of practicing, we take on a practice which is some guideline, whether it's yoga at 9:30 in the morning or meditation at 11 o'clock in the morning. We give a guideline and we accept whatever occurs. We even accept that we notice that we're criticizing ourselves. If you can at least accept that and not make it the gift that keeps on giving, namely, I'm criticizing myself. I'm really a bad person for criticizing myself. I'm even worse because I'm continuing to criticize myself. And I must be the worst because I can't give this up and I'm still criticizing myself. You're not alone. This is not news. But it's hard to stop that kind of brittle, brutal self-flagellation that many of us carry. But one element to doing that is really to have, again, a light touch acceptance of, here I go again. Thank you, Ronald Reagan. Here I go again with that whole routine. But I'm just going to notice I'm accepting it. I'm not fighting it. How long is this going to go on for? And I'm aware of it. One of the things with self-criticism is that it really thrives in what I call demi-awareness. So you may notice that if you are criticizing yourself, but you're actually trying to ignore it and fight it, it actually makes it worse. It actually sort of provokes and maintains it. And if you just open up to, okay, I'm giving you your due, I'm going to observe, how long does this go on for? Sometimes it can relax things. Sometimes. It's a complicated issue. It's not necessarily something that is that easy to deal with. And I want to honor that it's not always that easy. So acceptance of whatever is happening when we are practicing meditation. Sometimes we notice there's thoughts coming and going. We accept those. We lost our attention. We bring it back. We accept that. We might have a very, very deep sense of settlement. We accept that. Maybe some pleasure arises. We accept that. So that's F and A of fact. The third of fact is C, is curiosity. And really for spiritual life, curiosity is key. It's a wonderful human feature and quality. Who am I? What am I? What is the meaning of life? What is my experience? As I rest and breathing, curious about my experience. We chant hum, hum, uniting breath and mind and voice. I'm curious, how is that affecting me? A gentle light touch curiosity of what is going on, what is my experience? I'm in a new space. We're not at Don Mountain. How is that affecting my experience? It's very, very curious. I'm noticing it feels different, distinctly different. You know, can we put words on what that difference is when we are at Don Mountain and we're here? And the last of the guidelines for super centering is tenderness. It's a recent addition. And it really speaks to, most of us are, talk about Super Bowl, we're pretty supercharged. And when we get into something like spiritual practice, and some of that is very, very good. We do need energy. We do need persistence. We do need patience. But again, from my own side, there's a kind of willfulness that can become problematic, a heavy-handedness that can become problematic. And it's really, really helpful to have a kind of tenderness towards ourselves, towards others, towards our spiritual practice. It brings a different kind of quality to the endeavor. You know, the minute we say something like, bring your attention to your breath and rest in your breathing, if that kind of to-do clicker goes on in our brain, as that we've got something to do, not everyone, but many of us get very, very supercharged, and it's like, I've got this task to do. And with this task, I'm going to make something happen. One of the long-term learnings that we arrive at in meditation is that we cultivate habit patterns, and the habit patterns ultimately do us, as opposed to us doing the meditation. Now, of course, when we start meditating and start approaching a kind of spiritual endeavor, we have some sense that we are making a decision and we are coming somewhere and we're putting some time into something and we are intending. And it's all, again, very important, well and good. But even more significant is as we develop a habit of a kind of stance, a habit of a kind of practice, a habit of attention, it does occur that the habit does us as opposed to we doing the habit. And it's a kind of fruitional experience when that occurs, but it opens us up to a recognition that we are arriving at something that's much more deeply our nature, something much more deeply that is, in a way, already there, that we're just providing an opportunity for it to emerge. Our Tibetan teacher used to make a pun in Tibetan. It's not a pun in English. I'll tell it to you in Tibetan. Maybe you'll be able to hear it. In Tibetan, meditation is gom, and habit is comb. And so it basically, I'll just use those words, I'll fill in the rest in English. It's not gom, meaning meditation, it's really comb, to get habituated or accustomed to something. And so, you know, we come once and we do something and we have some kind of experience, but it's really wonderful to see what something can become when it becomes something that we're accustomed to, that we're habituated to, that allows our deeper nature to very, very naturally and spontaneously emerge. And part of that is getting a little bit out of the heavy-handed, muscular, Super Bowl approach to activity in our meditation, and really being very kind of tender in the way that we approach ourselves and the practice. So that's fact, freshness, acceptance, curiosity, and tenderness.
If you enjoyed this teaching, please visit our website, donmountain.org, to subscribe to this course and find other great Dharma offerings. May all beings always have happiness in its causes. May all beings always be free of pain in its causes.